Welcome into the Poetry Tavern, a place to discuss both reading and writing poetry, spotlighting new poems and ideas every week. Welcome all to this, my brand new podcast. My name's Charlotte, and in this podcast, we're going to be talking about poetry. And not just for this one specific episode, no, for the entire podcast. When I was asked what was something that I could probably talk forever about, I settled on poetry pretty quickly. It's been something that I've loved for a long time, and I don't imagine ever running out of things to love about it. Every day there is someone writing new poetry, and it's not like it's going to ever die as an art form. So, for this episode, I wanted to get into a little bit of what poetry actually is. In an essay by John Stuart Mill, he says that poetry is feeling confessing itself to itself in moments of solitude, and embodying itself in symbols which are the nearest possible representations of the feeling and the exact shape in which it exists in the poet's mind. Britannica defines poetry as literature that evokes a concentrated, imagined specific emotional response through language chosen and arranged for its meaning, sound, and rhythm. When I was a kid, I used to think poetry was all about the structure and the rhyming, and that to be a good poet, you had to understand the structure and the rhymes and what they meant, and you had to stick to them and use them religiously. But that's just not true. The structure and the rhymes are just a new way to explain a feeling or tell a story or convey something that isn't quite easy to convey in ways that would seem regular. One poem that really helped me to understand that the structure and form and rhyming scheme didn't have to limit the way that you write is a poem by Christina Rossetti called No Thank You, John. I never said I loved you, John. Why will you tease me day by day and wax a weariness to think upon with always do and pray? You know I never loved you, John. No fault of mine made me your toast. Why will you haunt me with a face as wan as shows an hour-old ghost? I dare say Meg or Moll would take pity upon you if you'd ask, and pray don't remain single for my sake, who can't perform that task. I have no heart, perhaps I have not, but then you're mad to take offence, that I don't give you what I have not got, use your own common sense. Let bygones be bygones, don't call me false, who owed not to be true. I'd rather answer no to 50 Johns than answer yes to you. Let's mar our peasant days no more, songbirds of passage days of youth. Catch at today, forget the days before, I'll wink at your untruth. Let us strike hands as hearty friends, no more no less, and friendship's good. Only don't keep in view ulterior ends and points not understood. In open treaty rise above, quibbles and shuffling off and on. Here's friendship for you if you like, but love, no thank you, John. I really love that poem. I always have like a little chuckle in the back of my throat whenever I read it. Just this form that's usually used to profess love or explain the depth of emotion is being used as this basically this letter to this guy telling him, hey, we can be friends, but not more. It's a friend zone poem in a form that's usually, you know, reserved for love. It's being used to basically tell him there is none in this situation. It's really entertaining, and I think finding these little sparks of humour amongst poetry in a bleak genre that's can sometimes be kind of bleak or deeply romantic, the comedy of it is gold. This probably won't be the last time I talk about Rossetti, considering she is my favourite poet from the Victorian era and one of my favourite poets ever. So, you know, I mean, I've got more to gush about, but I think I'll probably save it. All of this to say that the structure and the rhyme within poetry is just a tool to be used to convey a meaning, a message, a story that maybe would be harder to tell in prose form. Not to say that poetry exists outside of prose form, because there is specifically a kind of poetry known as prose poetry. Poetry really is whatever the writer makes of it, and in truth, it's also what the reader makes of it. I mean, a lot of poetry is subject to personal perception, there is an understanding that once a poet releases their work into the wild, people can perceive it however they want. I mean, you know, if you're still a living poet, you're welcome to tell people what your poem's all about. But, I mean, interpretation is so important. We sit whole exams about it. We write whole essays about what our personal understanding of someone else's work is, how we, as a modern audience, could understand a figure from the past, or how the way we view the world affects the way we read the work of someone from a completely different life. There is so much more in poetry than is always intended by the author. There is no universal experience of poetry. The way we read poetry, the way we write poetry, is always going to be affected by the life we've led, or the people we know, or the other books we're reading at the time. In her foreword for the 2001 to 2010 Poems of the Decade collection, Susan Herbert says something that's really important about modern poetry. The days when a poem could be anointed from on high as great and accepted serenely without argument are over, if they ever existed. This book, this Poems of the Decade collection, was a book that I was told to read for a class. And since I've owned it, I've had to flick through it many times, and while at first I just focused on the poems that I was told to read, that I was told to analyze, that I've highlighted to death, and actually looked at which ones speak to me the most, I think a lot of people learn poetry as a thing where your opinions are taught to you, but it's really good fun to find a poem that no one gets to tell you how to think about it. One poem from this collection that I wasn't told to read that I became enamored with was Wendy Cope's Being Boring, which is based on the Chinese curse, "May you live in interesting times." If you ask me what's new, I have nothing to say, except the garden is growing. I had a slight cold, but it's better today. I'm content with the way things are going. Yes, he is the same as he usually is, still eating and sleeping and snoring. I get on with my work, he gets on with his. I know this is all very boring. There was drama enough in my turbulent past. Tears and passion, I've used up a tank full. No news is good news, and long may it last. If nothing much happens, I'm thankful. A happier cabbage you never did see. My vegetable spirits are soaring. If you're after excitement, steer well clear of me. I want to go on being boring. I don't go to parties. Well, what are they for, if you don't need to find a new lover? You drink and you listen and drink a bit more, and you take the next day to recover. Someone to stay home with was all my desire, and now that I've found a safe mooring, I've just one ambition in life I aspire, to go on and on being boring. I really love this poem because it feels sweet and gentle and warm, and even though she's calling herself boring, she's talking about having this, like, she's got a garden she's happy with, she's got a husband she's happy with, she's doesn't need to live this big, extravagant, exciting life anymore because she's content with what she has. And although that may make other people label her as boring, it makes her happy enough that she doesn't feel the need to chase exciting things anymore. It's really interesting and lovely and sweet. And I mean, not every poem has to be perfectly deep, and it can just be nice and lovely. That's not to say that poetry exists without purpose. There are plenty of poets that write about things that are important to them to try and express them to the world, to try and express the importance of their cause or their emotion to the world. Personally, I really love writing about things that I feel, the things that make me upset, because I do think that having work out there that talks about emotion makes it easier to discuss emotions, makes it easier to see that you're not alone in a big ocean. One example of poetry being, I guess, put to work or being used for a cause can be found in Simon Armitage's Blossomers, the poems were commissioned by the National Trust to sort of make a celebration of blossoms and bring about a, you know, understanding of how important nature is to the world. He said something really interesting in his foreword. He said, "Poetry is in debt to the environment, having had its money worth from its use of nature as a byword for beauty or a pretty backdrop, and poetry must speak up for nature when it cannot speak for itself." So, to get back to my original point, what is poetry? Well, I guess it's just about conveying a feeling, or a story, or a cause. It's about getting the point across. It's what we make in, how we use the tools that the structures and the rhymes and the everything else gives us to express ourselves. And that's the end. Thank you so much for listening, even if you didn't make it this far. Although, if you didn't make it this far, you wouldn't hear this comment. I really appreciate it, and I hope you join me again next time. Goodbye for now. Next time on the Poetry Tavern, we'll be talking about the use of repetition within poetry. See you then.